Hello and welcome to the Lancet Psychiatry Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. Today, we're going to be talking about circadian rhythms, and I'm very pleased to be joined over the phone line by Laura Lyle from the Institute of Health and Wellbeing at the University of Glasgow, UK. Now, Laura and her colleagues have just published a paper with the Lancet Psychiatry, which is about the association of disrupted circadian rhythmicity with mood disorders, subjective well-being, and cognitive function. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
So I think the first thing we have to do is to establish some of this basic terminology which we're going to be talking about, because this is an area which perhaps listeners won't be familiar with. So the first question is, what are circadian rhythms?
So circadian rhythms are cycles of roughly 24 hours duration that occur in many biological and physiological systems of the body. Basically patterns that recur in a 24-hour period. So you get circadian rhythms in things like your body temperature, hormone release, and the one we're interested in for the study we've just done is rest activity patterns.
And another term which you use in the paper, which is a German term clearly, is Zeitgeber. Now, if I remember my German, that means literally time giver. What are Zeitgebers?
Yeah, so as you say, time giver. So these are any sort of cue in the environment that you can entrain these 24-hour rhythms too. So a classic one, for example, would be light. So when it gets light in the morning, that is a cue that you should be kind of awakening. So other cues could come from, for example, the temperature of the environment, the timing of your eating and drinking. But yeah, the most common one we refer to is usually light, but anything that is a cue to the time in the environment, basically.
And so normally what happens in the usual day is that these different cues come at different points in time, and your activity will change accordingly. So your activity at, say, 6 in the morning is going to be very different to your activity at noon, in turn is going to be different to your activity at 6 o'clock in the evening and later. And I think this is what you mean when you're talking in your paper about the relative amplitude variable. Is that the case, the sort of difference in the level of activity throughout the day?
Yeah, that's right. So this relative amplitude variable is usually obtained from accelerometry recordings. So an accelerometer is a wrist-worn device that tracks your activity patterns throughout the day. And relative amplitude basically tells you the relative difference between your activity levels in your most active 10 hours and your least active 5 hours. So if you have healthy circadian rhythms, then typically you'll be quite active during your most active 10 hours, and then your least active 5 hours, you'll have stable, undisturbed sleep. So you'll have a high value of relative amplitude. A lower relative amplitude could come from, for example, if you have quite low levels of activity during the day, or if you have disturbed sleep, which means you're more active during the night than you would be if you had undisturbed sleep.
And these wrist-worn devices, which I think a lot of listeners will be familiar with, a bit like Fitbits, presumably.
Yeah, exactly.
You used these in your study?
Yeah, so we didn't actually collect the data ourselves. The data is part of the UK Biobank cohort. So this is this fantastic data set consisting of over 500,000 UK residents. And data were collected on those people beginning in about 2006 on a range of variables relating to their lifestyle, their personality, cognitive ability. The data we were interested in, as I said, was the accelerometry data. So this was a few years after these people were first recruited to the study. About 100,000 people were invited to come back and wear a wrist-worn accelerometer for up to a week. And this is the data we're interested in. So we've derived this relative amplitude variable from the accelerometry data. And from that, we're looking at links with these people's mental health and well-being.
And you got data from, I think, around 91,000 participants?
Yeah, that's right. So there were originally accelerometry data for 100,000, but after you've excluded people, for example, where they didn't wear the accelerometer for long enough or their data was a bit messy, we were left with just over 91,000 participants.
And from these participants, you got the data, and the data you could then use to measure what we were talking about earlier, which are these sorts of peaks and troughs in daily activity. And then the purpose of your study was what?
In the past, people have assumed that there is a link between mood disorders, so depression and bipolar disorder, and circadian disruption. So this circadian disruption, where people might have disturbed rest activity cycles, seems to be quite a common feature of depression and bipolar disorder. And so previous studies have looked at this, but often they've tended to use subjective reports. So for example, just asking people their opinion of how stable their circadian rhythms are, or they've used quite small samples. So we were lucky enough to be able to use this objective measure of relative amplitude in a huge sample. And we looked at the associations between this relative circadian amplitude and a range of mental health and well-being outcomes. So we looked at links with whether someone met criteria for having had lifetime depression or lifetime bipolar disorder, as well as their subjective well-being, so how happy they reported being, how satisfied they were with their health, whether they felt lonely, as well as personality measures like neuroticism, which is essentially how prone you are to stress and anxiety, and mood instability, so how often you experience mood swings. And we found that people who tended to have lower relative amplitude, so indicating that they've got less marked distinction between their rest and activity periods, they were more likely to meet criteria for lifetime depression and for bipolar disorder. They reported lower subjective happiness, lower health satisfaction. They were more likely to report feeling lonely. They had greater mood instability, higher levels of neuroticism, and also slower reaction time, which is a kind of crude measure of their cognitive ability.
And these measurements of a mental illness, mental health, these were gained from questionnaires given to the participants?
Yeah, that's right. So these are mostly from an online mental health questionnaire, which was completed. It was actually a few years after the initial baseline assessment. People were invited to complete a questionnaire about their mental health over the internet. And from their responses, we were able to categorise people into whether they met criteria for major depression or bipolar disorder, or whether they didn't meet criteria for either and were classified as into the control group.
I mean, this association between disrupted circadian rhythms and mental ill health and physical ill health as well, it's something which people have talked about for many years. And I can see that the data which you have with this objective measurement is really an advance on the previous retrospective studies and so on. The thing which has always, I suppose, concerned me a bit is the possibility of confounders, that maybe people who work shifts and so on have all sorts of other socioeconomic problems which might be associated with poor mental health or poor physical health. Were you able to account for that in your study?
Yeah, well, we tried to account for those factors as much as possible. So in the models we conducted, we were able to control for things like participants' age and gender. We used a measure of their socioeconomic status and a few lifestyle factors as well. And we also tried to account for people's BMI, because that can be linked to both their circadian rhythms and their risk of depression and bipolar disorder, as well as history of childhood trauma, because that's another important risk factor for mood disorders. So these associations we found were independent of quite a wide range of potential confounders. But it is important to note that a lot of these confounders were measured at a different time than the accelerometry data. So at the time people wore the accelerometer, we weren't able to get a detailed measure of things like their occupation, which meant we weren't able to account for things like whether they were currently shift workers or not. But based on other work we've done, we think that the percentage of the sample who are shift workers is quite small. So we hope that didn't have too big an effect on our results.
And this is a cross-sectional study, of course, so what can you say, if anything, about directionality? Is it that circadian disruption precedes mental health problems? Is it the case that mental health problems result in circadian disruption? What can we say from these data, if anything?
This is probably the biggest limitation of this study. So while it's the biggest cross-sectional study of circadian rhythmicity and mental health and well-being so far, we found important evidence of associations. We can't really tell from the data what the direction of causality is. So as you say, it could be that there is a direct causal link where circadian disruption causes impaired subjective well-being and increases risk of mood disorder. Or it could be the opposite. It could be that this circadian disruption is a consequence of mood disorder and its associated risk factors. Or another possibility is that there are shared genetic or environmental factors that underlie both circadian rhythmicity and mental health and well-being, and that they're not directly causally linked. So that is a limitation that we can't really get at the causal effects here. And that's why we're hoping to go on to do some future studies.
So in the future, to answer these questions about directionality and cause and effect, presumably you'd want to do a longitudinal study design.
Yeah, that would be the ideal design. It would be useful to kind of untangle cause and effect if we could track the same individuals over a period of time and look at whether this objectively measured circadian disruption can actually reliably predict risk of going on to receive a diagnosis of mood disorder. Or alternatively, within patients who already have diagnoses of mood disorder, it would be useful if we could record this accelerometry data over an extended period and look at whether the change in these objective measures, such as relative amplitude, can actually predict onset of a new episode of depression or mania.
And what can we say right now on the basis of this data? I know that there's a lot of concern at the moment about smartphones disrupting circadian rhythms, about people not getting enough sleep, about 24-hour societies, about work following you home. Is there any implication we can draw from your research for the current state of things?
As we mentioned before, we can't really ascertain what the direction of causality is here from these cross-sectional associations. But together with future work, it might be that we find that things like relative amplitude, so this subjectively measured circadian rhythmicity, could be an important marker of vulnerability to impaired well-being and risk of mood disorder. So obviously we need to go on to do some more work on this to see if this is actually a reliable predictor, but it could potentially be a useful tool in kind of marking out those people in the population who might be at risk of going on to suffer from impaired mood or impaired subjective well-being.
And would you say that generally awareness of circadian disruption, good sleep hygiene and so on, is that something which we have enough evidence to be able to advise on now?
So again, from this study, we don't know if there's a direct causal link between disturbed rhythms and the outcomes we looked at. But there is some evidence from other studies that improving your rhythmicity, sometimes using these interventions like bright light therapy and things like that, there's some evidence that this can improve mood and cognition and well-being. So while the jury is still kind of out on whether this has a direct causal role, it's definitely not going to do people harm if they improve their sleep hygiene and try to stabilize their circadian rhythms.
Okay, so if you're listening to this podcast on a smartphone, best to switch it off and wind down some other way if you're late at night. Thank you very much, Laura, for joining us. That's a really interesting study. That's online at the Lancet Psychiatry website, and we look forward to seeing what your group produces in the future. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, the listener, for downloading this podcast. We do hope that you'll join us again next time. But for now, goodbye.